on Pet Wash Day. Te Damia for joining me this week for Ohomni Iotaka. I am your host, Donna Hawkes, as we continue with reading Water Lily by Ella Deloria. So let's look back. And Water Lily, just to do a little intro to this week's reading, Water Lily is feeling uneasy. She is feeling, even though, you know, she has all these new in-laws, these relatives, and her husband's sacred horse is very good to her, but she still has this feeling of not truly being happy. And everyone is treating her friendly and respectfully, but she's feeling that there's something definitely wrong. So let's begin. Something was definitely wrong. Nor was it because of Sacred Horse. Though she still felt they did not know each other well, he was very kind and gentle with her, and a good provider. She had much that many a girl would wish for. What ailed her anyway? Suddenly, she had the answer. It was that she lacked home people, relatives of birth. Everyone here was a relative of marriage. They were his home people. He was free to be himself in their presence in a way that she was not. This was to be expected, of course. All her life, she had seen avoidance respect and thought it entirely proper. But being so recently placed in this new situation where she must live in its formal atmosphere exclusively, she found the strain becoming too hard for one so young and so far from home. She needed family relatives such as Sacred Horse was enjoying in his own Teoshpae. She needed an environment charged with parental affection, where she could indulge her moods and could be herself without constraint. Parents, uncles, aunts, and grandparents humored you, even spoiled you a bit. Before them, you could be outspoken, impudent, and perhaps say or do silly things, with the assurance that they would understand. Water Lily needed her menfolk, too, her brothers and cousins, ready at all times to protect her and give her social backing. Without them, a woman felt insecure against, she did not know what, but she felt as if here she stood vulnerable and alone. The environment of the family of marriage obligated one to play an adult, responsible role at all times without slack. The kinship laws so ordered it. Life in the Teoshpae of Sacred Horse was, for Water Lily, like wearing ceremonial dress all the time, and how she longed for homely, easy clothes in which to drop her dignity just now and then. Few persons were individualist enough to kick over the kinship traces as the senior wife did to make her son's young wife feel at home. Water Lily was grateful to her for that, but it was not enough. She dared not break rules, too, and behave like a careless child toward her husband's mother. However informal the older woman was, her son's wife was still her daughter-in-law. If only I had one person in this camp circle that was a family relative, so I could relax in her presence just once among all these people. Water Lily sighed. Everyone is an in-law to me. As if in answer, unbelievable as it seemed to her, a man and his wife came one day to visit Water Lily, calling her daughter. The woman embraced her with motherly tenderness. My daughter, she explained. We learned only last night, on our return home, who it was that has become the wife of Sacred Horse. You are in good hands, daughter, for this is an able and upright family, where you will always be treated well. And indeed, they should be proud of you. I am sure they are. The woman had brought Water Lily courtesy food and gifts. Your brother Red Leaf, it was, who told us about you, she said. Red Leaf? My brother? Water Lily tried to think where she had heard that name. All at once it came back to her. Why, Red Leaf was the little boy with whom her brother Ohia played during her tribal reunion some years ago, before the trip to Palani's camp circle. She remembered how the two boys took an instant liking to each other, and how Ohia, in his eager fashion, had made a friendship pact with his playmate. How he had come in, breathless and solemn, to announce to his family, "We have gone into fellowhood." Bluebird and Rainbow had accepted the news a little doubtfully, reminding Ohia that such a friendship was for grown men who understood the heavy obligations and were prepared to face them always. Maybe when you are men, you will not be sure that is what you want, Bluebird said gently. But that did not deter Ohia, his sister recalled, smiling. Such a little thing, children imitating adults. And yet here it was working out to her advantage. For here were people she could call father and mother. Water Lily remembered that Rainbow had said to Bluebird, "It seems like playing with a sacred matter, doesn't it?" But Red Leaf's parents had taken the matter seriously and approved it so much that there had been an exchange of presents. And then the two fellows were separated and were seemingly destined never to meet again, at least as playmates. Daughter, the woman did all the talking, or nearly all. We would have claimed you sooner, but we have been in the Black Hills, where your father has a white man friend. Lean White Man, he calls him. And a good name it is, too, for he is very thin and long and weak-looking, but so active, the way he can work would surprise you. Whenever he goes far away, toward the sunrise, we camp near his cabin to guard it for him. And when he returns, he brings us very fine presents, like these dishes of metal that I have brought for you. Water Lily could hardly believe that a Dakota and a white man could be friends. And this white man, my mother, she said, are you sure he is really good in his heart toward my father? How may my father know, since he cannot understand his language? Oh, but your father does, the woman was very complacent. Say something for her. Well, he cleared his throat in preparation. Well, he calls me Injun. That means Dakota in his language. I say, got tobacco? When I want to smoke. It isn't hard. And two, my friend talks some Dakota, so we get along. Oh, he is my friend, all right. The wife cut in. He gave your father many fine things to bring home. I have for you a piece of red blanket flannel. He gave him knives and spoons and blue as well as red cloth, and even a holy iron, a gun, to shoot with. When the newfound parents of Water Lily prepared to leave after eating the good meal she had served them, the woman said, Daughter, we live exactly opposite, across the common. Return home whenever you feel like it and spend the day with your own relatives. She indicated the direction with a quick upward thrust of her chin, her hands being full of return gifts from Water Lily. Do you see the tallest teepee? The one with its upper half painted blue? Well, that's not it. But the second one on the left, the next tallest, that's it. It was a habit of the people to eliminate other similar objects until they isolated the one they wished to point out. Not that, nor that, nor that yonder, but the other. The father added his invitation. Come soon and often, my daughter. You have mothers and aunts who will prepare foods you like. You have fathers and uncles and brothers, sisters and cousins. And you have especially your own little brother, Red Leaf. You have sons, daughters, nieces, and nephews, and many grandparents. They are all eager for a sight of you. When they had walked off a few paces, the woman turned and said, Why, I nearly forgot. You even have a grandchild now. Your eldest sister's son became the father of a baby girl only yesterday. So come and see your granddaughter. They cut across the common, walking one behind the other, with the man leading. Watching them go, Water Lily felt relief. From now on, things were going to be easier. Here were people with whom she could be herself without stopping to consider her dignity. Kinship came in halves. The family of birth and the family of marriage. In the one, a person was permitted to play the child occasionally. In the other, you must strictly play the adult as a matter of self-respect, once having accepted an adult role. Water Lily had been cramped in a one-sided society. Now, with its complement, she was going to manage all right. It was best to have many contacts. Having both kinds of relatives kept life in balance. The fact that these new parents were nothing like her own father and mother made no difference. They were older and not nearly so handsome as was Rainbow and Bluebird. But she did not think to draw comparisons. It was what they symbolized, what they offered Water Lily that mattered. Being a respected daughter-in-law was all right. The deference continually shown her was pleasant. The challenge to reciprocate that deference was smoothly and correctly offered, no problem. She had been too well trained in all the intricacies of kinship courtesy and behavior to make mistakes. But now she could cast aside that formal role occasionally and be somebody's child. And she was glad of that. Now, if only Bluebird and Rainbow would arrive for that long visit and renew their relationship with these kindly local parents of hers, life would be perfect, she thought. And then she remembered what it was that was preventing their coming immediately. She thought of her poor, old, sick grandfather and was sad again. But not quite so sad. The average Dakota woman did not indulge in confessions or confidences with other women or in minute analysis regarding her married life. She did not share any intimate secrets of that life or her reactions to it, whether pleasant or unpleasant. She could live and die with her own secrets. And she did so. Her one concern was to maintain her dignity. She would not make it possible for other women to ridicule her or accuse her of a lack of reticence on that point. However agreeable or upsetting her marriage might be, she managed a calm exterior, a convincing matter-of-factness that prevented others, including her husband, from guessing her feelings. If her married life was obnoxious to her, she simply walked out of it without a word as to why. If pressed, she might say, "It was not agreeable to me." That being so, and her reason was clear and sufficient. There was no economic need for her to endure in silence. She knew that her brothers and male cousins were ready to provide for her, and her own relatives to take her back into their midst. She did not have to hang on just to be supported by a husband. Nor was there any need to flaunt her married state. Why should she, since there was no particular triumph where the premise was man in pursuit, woman overcome? Thus, presumably, she had not landed him, he had landed her. Let the man gloat if gloating there was to be. A woman who acted important because she was married was something of a fool, and incurred ridicule rather than aroused admiration or envy. Almost any woman could marry somebody, and marriage for women was the rule. There was no particular distinction in it that one married woman should play it up. Back of it all was the kinship reason for a wife's reticence. No matter with whom she exchanged confidences, whether she told about her husband's intimacy with her, would eventually reach his women relatives, particularly his sisters and cousins, and they would bitterly resent his being publicly discussed in an undignified light. They could not forgive a stupid wife who thus made their brother or cousin appear ridiculous or worse. It was the kinship duty of these women folk, of his, to uphold his honor and defend him in all phases of his life. And since every woman had brothers and cousins to defend, they all held the same attitude in this matter. Thus kinship once again wielded a controlling force here, in muzzling all idle talk about marital intimacy involving specific personalities. Growing up in a milieu where these ideas and habits obtained, Water Lily could not help but reflect them in her own marriage, nor had it been enough that she absorbed them from her surroundings unconsciously. Her mother must hammer them in also with perhaps two positive strokes. When you marry, my daughter, remember that your children are more important than you. Always the new life comes first. Your duty to your children must be in accordance to this rule. Next, it is your duty to honor and respect your husband and to keep your life with him a secret always. A woman who talks about her relations with her husband is disloyal to her mate and a reproach to herself. Accept your new life as a mature woman, even while you are gentle and yielding. Do not behave in a childish manner toward your husband. You are his helpmate, not his baby. Be grown up. Watch your actions and attitude toward your husband's relatives. If you make crude mistakes, they will think you are ignorant of kinship manners and will be sorry that their son married you. Be respectful. Honor them by avoiding them. And in all your dealings with relatives of marriage, hold back a little at first. Keep your reserve at all times. Be composed. Be wise. Water Lily had followed her mother's advice almost without qualification. It was her privilege and duty to be bashful and prudent in adjusting to her new situation as wife and relative-in-law. That was proper for the young bride, even though it was bound to take time to feel at home with her husband and to break down her habitual silence. The husband who understood this and was willing to wait patiently and who did not try to draw her out prematurely by tricks was indeed a wise man. It paid him in the end. All the same, it was beginning to dawn on Sacred Horse that his wife was being unduly slow, unduly quiet. He could not tell what she was thinking, even while her behavior was all that he could ask. Misgivings began to assail him. Could it be that she was a naturally glum person? Or that she regretted her marriage to him? Did he not please her as she pleased him? Would she never snap out of it and feel fully at home with him? Finally, he went to consult his cousin, a man of more years and more experience than himself. "I am troubled, my cousin. She hardly ever speaks unless I start the conversation. She talks along well enough then, but what troubles me is that she never begins and she always stops first. She seems afraid to talk freely. Why, you'd be surprised at the mute life we live together." Then hopelessly he added, "If it is always going to be so, how can we have a good life?" In giving advice, men usually thought a while first. But at last the cousin said, "It is always harder for a newlywed couple to get used to each other within the man's tioshpae. You made your first mistake in not staying for a while with her family, where she would only have you to adjust to. Then, when she knew you well, she would be better able to meet the problem of in-laws by itself. I say this out of my own experience. At first, I stayed with my wife's tioshpae, where I was the one to act in a bashful manner, not she. It was easy enough for me to stay out of the way, and she was still surrounded by her familiar relatives. That made it easier for us to start our life together. It did not take her long to get used to me, since I alone was a stranger." He made another observation. "If your wife is still reserved toward you, do not be alarmed. Consider that she was bought. A woman who hastily jumps into a marriage by eloping must needs go all out to get acquainted with her husband. She can only affect bashfulness after her bold step. One who marries by mutual agreement needs only to meet her husband halfway. But the one who is bought, well, a man must expect to go all the way. He must do all his wooing after marriage. But don't you worry, my cousin. You are still a boy and have no knowledge of woman's nature. When there is a child, it will all work out. Shy women always find their tongue fast enough then. Just let a babe lie helpless in their arms, crying for nourishment, and then, without a thought as to who might be looking, they forget themselves, driven by their single desire to soothe it. Then they pour out a steady flow of tender words into the infant's ear, and soon they have the habit of talking. Just wait and see." All that Sacred Horse had told his cousin about Water Lily was true. He could count on the fingers of one hand the time so far that she had talked spontaneously and at any encouraging length. And those rare times were very precious to him. Memorable was the day he killed an antelope and brought it home already skinned. After unloading it outside the teepee, he came in, ate the food she had ready for him, and then lay down flat on his back on the opposite side of the teepee from her. "Ah, it is good to stretch out," he groaned contentedly while he watched her from the corner of his eye. She only smiled a little flicker of a smile as she lowered her eyes on her work and said nothing. He tried again. "Now, if someone were to remove my damp moccasins, wipe my throbbing feet, and paint the soles of them with red ceremonial paint, that would be perfect. After a weary day, to be made a beloved in that way." He saw her start to smile with a spark of interest in her eyes. and then quickly bite her lip and look down, a silent little woman in her woman's space. He had not really expected her to paint his feet. Not yet. That was another custom for seasoned couples who had learned to esteem one another from a long mutual kindliness through the years. It was no routine requirement for a wife, any more than dressing a wife's hair was routine for a husband. A man did not ask for his feet to be soothed and honored. It was an unsolicited and spontaneous sign of wifely affection and appreciation. Sacred Horse knew that they were both too young in years and too new in their marriage for that. He only said it as a joke, because it would be for them such an incongruous performance. After a long interval, he broke the silence. I don't suppose you know what that is. One sees it so seldom, and it is for couples much older than we. He gave up then and rolled over toward the teepee wall for a nap. She'd never talk, he guessed. But for once, Water Lily did talk, softly reminiscing. I do know what it is. My mother has done it. One time I especially remember, she did it after a long, hard day when hunting was very poor and everyone was anxious. We were all miserable with hunger. Both Smiling One and Ohia were crying for food, and my mother was very unhappy. But she called us in and said, Children, probably your father will have to return without any meat again today. All the animals have vanished together, by agreement, it seems. We may have to fill up on more mashed timsila, prairie turnips, again tonight. He will get home worn out after trying hard to find food for us. So what do you say we paint his feet and put pretty new moccasins on him? We forgot our hunger and got busy. Everyone helped. Mother got the water ready while Ohio went over the prairie, gathering fresh sage plants, the soft, fragrant kind with tender, velvety leaves, for her to wipe my father's feet dry and cool them at the same time. I took down the paint bag from the teepee pole, where it always hung, and opened it as carefully as I could because the paint was in powder form. I spread it out so that it would be ready to use. My little sister, Smiling One, she was only three then, sat holding the new moccasins. When it came time, she surrendered them one at a time so very solemnly that it was funny. Water Lily laughed indulgently, forgetting herself. When my father came in, he staggered from loss of sleep. He was limp from fatigue. When we painted his feet, he said nothing, only he moaned a little. But we knew he was happy, and he had brought meat at last, too. He had walked to the big hills on the horizon to find it, and carried a large deer on his back all the way home. But what pleased him most was that even before we knew he was bringing food to us, we had been planning so to make him our beloved by putting red paint ceremonially on him. I remember too, but there she stopped short. The long speech had so astonished her suddenly that she could not go on. It was at such times, when in a nostalgic mood, that she could forget her new status momentarily and talk freely and charmingly. Oh, that's so sweet. We are going to stop here, of course, in our reading of the novel Water Lily by Ella DeLoria. And I want to again say Pidamia for being with me as we continue reading this beautiful book. I am your host, Donna Hawkes, for Ohomani Iotaka. And I just want to say, may your days be filled with good health and happiness. Onhamashite. Another reading. So, doksha ake. We'll meet again. This program is made possible with funding from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting.